Jay.
Hey, how's it going?
Great show this week. The good people who are listening to this are about to hear it. But before we started, I just wanted to make sure you win. Are we doing this book club?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm going to order the book.
You got the book. I got the book. Okay, the book is The Bitcoin Standard by Saifedean Ammous. I'm sorry for that pronunciation. We are going to read this book on the show. The first section we're going to read for next week is chapters 1-4. You good with that?
Yeah, I think I can do that. I mean, it is a book that is, I think, a lot of information in it, and there's, but it is not a particularly long book.
Yes. We're only talking about like 60 pages or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a little preview of the foreword. Guess it's by an old friend of yours.
Who?
Nassim Nicholas Taleb.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
So if this goes well, we're going to do more books. You can read along. You don't have to read along. Like, hopefully the discussion is interesting and it's a good jumping off point. But either way, but if you have picked up the book, maybe tweet us at CoinTalkShow or just let us know you've got it and let us know what questions you're having as you read.
Great. Yeah. I think I'll have a lot of questions too. We might need like a bit of a, like a translator or something to go through this with us.
Well, maybe if we get some tough points, we'll try and bring in some like ringer guests who can break it down better than we can. But I'm excited about this. This sounds like fun.
Me too.
All right, cool. It's Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer in the Crypto Cave with Jay Kang. And our guest this week, coming up shortly, we have Brady Dale from CoinDesk. What did we talk about? Well, we talked about how I got hacked. My site, AaronLammer.com, was held hostage for Bitcoin. The inside story there. We talked about Stefan Marbury's blockchain ventures. We talked about the IBM blockchain running ads constantly during the NBA playoffs. We talked about Japan's financial regulators pushing for crypto exchanges to drop privacy coins. We talked about the CFTC and their whistleblower awards and lots more. Brady writes a lot about ICOs, so that was one thing we were eager to talk to him about. We're brought to you in partnership with Medium. Medium has all kinds of great writing about crypto, so you can keep up with what is happening in this rapid news cycle. They have this kind of landing page for it. It's at me.dm/crypto. It has new stuff on it every day. I recommend it. If you find yourself liking it, you could start paying $5 a month to become a member, get exclusive stuff, and you're supporting those writers. Here's the show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, May 1st at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $9,004.
Welcome to Coin Talk. Jay, so much to talk about.
A lot to talk
about. I feel like we have to go straight for it.
Let's talk about what you're wearing first. Are you wearing a jersey that has no logo on it?
No, it's actually got like a white on white Warriors thing on it. It's like Warriors warm up jersey. I feel like this is something you would like. You'd go to the club and you'd see Klay Thompson wearing this.
Speaking of which, I was talking to somebody recently, and I was reminded of watching Game 6 when Klay Thompson hit all those shots against the Warriors when they had Durant. And I was like, I think that I watched it with Aaron, and he was wearing a Warriors poncho.
That's correct. That's hanging right. That poncho is currently in the Crypto Cave. That poncho got quasi-retired after the Warriors lost to the Cavs the second year because it seemed like it might have bad mojo after that. But I think I might bring it back for the imminent Rockets-Warriors series.
Fair enough.
You know, we're actually going to talk later in the program about the greatest ICO athlete pairing in history. And it reminded me that I think the greatest product athlete fit so far in the marketplace has been Klay Thompson and chocolate milk.
Yeah.
You can't be like, there's no more natural pairing than that possible.
It was much better than the Kevin Love chocolate milk pairing, which, you know, it's just him shooting three pointers.
All right. We will be talking some NBA ICOs later on, but first, I feel like we have to address the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Or should I say the vandal in the network?
It was CoinTalk's first quasi-viral moment. I feel like you got a lot of retweets from the luminaries of the space.
I would say that I feel like my crypto OG card has been punched.
Yeah, you're punched.
So let me tell you a little bit about what happened for the listeners out there. Well, we won't go through the whole thing because it's embarrassing trying to recount internet jokes on audio. But after many times us joking about getting hacked as a result of hosting this show, I got a DM from a listener to the show, actually. Shouts to him. Who alerted me that AaronLammer.com, my website, had some sort of a hacking notice on it and a demand for a Bitcoin ransom.
Yeah. What was on AaronLammer.com? I've known you for maybe 8 years, and I've never been to
AaronLammer.com. Is just like says all the projects I'm involved in. It like links to all my podcasts and music and stuff like that. So it's of not like huge value to me. I wouldn't be like glad to lose it, but it's not like I would have bought AaronLammer.com from a reseller for $10,000 or something.
Sure.
Like I bought stoner.co.
Yeah.
So I felt like we were in a pretty good position to negotiate here. Anyway, basically what happened was I went through a long sequence with this hacker of offering him various other cryptocurrencies that were not Bitcoin and pretending to be confused about the differences between Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin. It's on Medium. People can look it up.
Well, okay, so here are my questions immediately about it. I saw the hacked page, and it was pretty funny. It was like...
Jay also, I like to say, expressed absolutely no sympathy before it started laughing at me. No worry that perhaps the show we host together had caused me problems, or that perhaps our assets could be getting hacked.
That is true. I had zero moments of sympathy.
Yeah, and you weren't like, did... like our domains or our hosting get hacked. You just started laughing at the fact that our show had gotten hacked.
Well, okay, so it looked like it was a page that had been created on like Angel Fire or GeoCities. Like the quality of the hacking page was
very
bad.
Instantly I was like, I Googled the hack because it had like a name and I could see that other people had been hacked in this manner with the same page.
Okay, so how much money did this guy want from you?
Well, he asked for 0.025 Bitcoins, which I originally rounded as 0.25 Bitcoins, which is kind of, that's where I thought we were going to come in. I thought we were going to be talking about a couple $1,000s.
Yeah.
But 0.025 is like $230-ish.
Yeah.
Kind of low.
Well, that was my problem with the whole thing, was that he asked for so little amount of money. And I was trying to think what goes through a hacker's head when they do something like this. Like, do they... are they like, well, listen, we need to set a reasonable price for AaronLammer.com. Do they have like a scale where they think that certain pages are going to be worth more to people? Like, I mean, if he looked you up, if he did this hack and he was at all, I'm sure that he didn't, he might be under the impression that you're an immensely successful podcaster and recording artist and that you might have millions of dollars.
I think it was random.
I think it was random too.
Although at the time I was like, oh no, I should have never dabbled in coin celebrity.
Yeah, and this also came on the tail end of your Cryptopia account being hacked like every single week.
And Adrian Jeffries, who actually wrote about this in The Verge, had asked me, like, do you worry about getting hacked because you're doing the show now? And I was like, ha ha, no. And then instantly after that, someone's been trying to brute force reset my password on Cryptopia for months. Caused me to sell my sumo and lose the amazing sumo run that's been happening since then.
You lost your title and you lost out on gains because of that, which I look.
It's just like real feudalism. If you leave your land, it's over for you.
I will say that when you told me that you're getting, that someone was trying to brute force your Cryptopia account, which to me is the most hysterically bad use of that sort of technology ever, that perhaps it was karma for you talking about sumo every single episode and talking about how you had it on Cryptopia. Do you not think those two were related at all?
Well, now I don't think that they were related. But at the time, I mean, this is like the nature of paranoia around these kind of things. Like, you're never going to know. He's never going to tell me, like, how he came upon me.
I would agree. I don't think that this hack had anything to do with any of that, though, because it was so unsophisticated and they asked for so little money.
I have another piece of evidence there, too, because the actual exploit of my WordPress was through a friend's WordPress site that I host on my server that's for his maple syrup operation. So basically, the door in was not my website. It was a like small maple syrup WordPress site. Great syrup, though.
It's good syrup?
Good syrup.
The way that this guy tried to get you to talk to him was over Facebook Messenger, right?
Well, that was the most surprising thing. I was like, oh, great. Like, I'm fucked. It's 0.025 BTC, so maybe I should just pay it,
yeah.
You know? Also, like, they had all these instructions about how to buy Bitcoin to pay him off. I'm like, if you're going to go put someone through the trouble of buying Bitcoin, you might as well ask for, like, more than 0.025 BTC. But anyway, I click on the contact button, and it just takes me straight to a Facebook page.
Really?
Like, the contact us link was just to a specific person with a name, which I'm not going to say because Medium has asked me to blur out his name on the web, but it's just a guy's Facebook page with a bunch of anime on it.
Shocking. Shocking. Did he say where he was from?
Well, he didn't say where he was from, but the person who alerted me to it did some snooping in some hacker forums and said that his Facebook page matched someone named Syntax Error, who had been in hacker forums, who was in Morocco.
Oh.
So, and one of the things is the site that they put over my site had this auto-playing video in the background that was playing this kind of ominous, I describe it as like stock music hip-hop.
Wow, so it really was like Web.0 with autoplay music.
Yeah, well, and one of the things he had said in the hacker forum was like, make the victim listen to music.
Oh, wow. So it really is.
It's
like,
really to annoy you.
Yeah.
If you don't pay, this auto-playing loop is going to be on your website forever.
That actually would work for me, I think. I don't know if it would push me to pay the Bitcoin, but it would be a factor that I would put into my calculations. I'd be like, oh, my God, anyone who Googles me first is going to believe that I have the worst security on everything possible. And then they're going to be like, what the fuck is this song?
One of the things I was thinking about doing as I was progressively trolling him was to... A lot of things I was doing is pretending I didn't understand various Bitcoin debates.
Sure.
And I was going to pretend I didn't know that you could send 0.025 Bitcoin and tell him that I was going to send him a full Bitcoin and have him send me back the change. So, oh, another thing was our friend Niraj looked up the address he had supplied to send the Bitcoin and said one person had sent a ransom to that address.
Yeah, see, that's...
It's kind of like the Nigerian scam. Like, it's probably millions of tries before you get one.
Yeah, and that's why you should ask for more money. Like,
totally agree.
That's the part where I'm just like, well, what is his return on it, you know, on time invested here when he's only asking for like $220?
Well, and additionally, like, how many people even have Bitcoin or could figure out how to get Bitcoin? If you hit someone like me who actually has Bitcoin, you might as well, like, try to get more than that. I actually have the Bitcoin to send him and didn't send it to him.
Yeah, yeah. And look, so how do you resolve this sort of thing for our listeners who may get hacked?
I went to my my server is with a company called DreamHost, and they were really easily, like, within 5 minutes, been able to see on the server logs what had happened. It had to do with leaving a WordPress installation that had not been set up yet, so you could set passwords and get into it. And they got into this domain through it being on the same user. But the basic thing was that by the time I was talking to him, I already knew I had the domain back, which he did not realize, which gave me the upper hand of these negotiations.
Yeah, it seems like a very bad hacking strategy, to be completely honest with you. And also, Bitcoin is pretty traceable. So,
yeah.
But I guess it's just the easiest thing for people to buy. Like, he couldn't be like, okay, the first thing you do is go on Coinbase and you buy Bitcoin, and then you go on Bittrex, you send it, and then you buy Monero and send me that Monero.
I was thinking the same thing. Ransoming someone for Bitcoin is brazen. It's like extorting someone and being like, mail a check to my home address.
Yeah. Like, Niraj could figure out how many ransoms have been sent to this guy within, yeah, like 6 seconds of the time when you announced it.
Well, that also empowered me to not pay him. I was like, oh, only one person has paid him ever? I'm not going to pay him.
What he should do is send a bunch of fake 0.25 Bitcoin donations into that wallet so it seems like everybody is doing it. And then that'll pressure you in because you'll be like, oh, there must have been a point where these people capitulated because something was over their head.
Yes.
You know?
That would have been the narrative I was looking for. If I saw that like 10,000 people had paid him, I would have been like, fuck it, I'm paying him.
Exactly.
Clearly that's the smart money.
Hopefully he's listening to this podcast and that he can improve his hacking in the future.
Well, I did invite him on the show.
What did he say?
He was like, I don't need this bullshit, man. Like, he eventually lost patience with me. So then I posted these chats online And almost instantly, I would say within an hour, people were accusing me of faking the entire thing.
Yeah, well, look, that's a community that you and I have decided to enter.
Yeah, and get hacked within.
Yeah, everything is fake news.
Are you worried about getting hacked?
A little bit. I did triple down on all my security after this happened to you. But I don't have jkang.com, but I think I have a Wikipedia page. But, you know, people vandalize that all the time. And they're like, it's always stuff like...
Are you ever around with Jordan Peterson fans?
It really is. There was one where somebody edited to say, like, on such and such date, Jake Hang, like, aired a piece that was clearly edited to slander Jordan Peterson or something like that.
On this date in U.S. history, Jake Hang got owned by Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, it's really, but that happens all the time. Like, there was one that was, like, saying that I had maliciously slandered MLS fans and called them all fascists, and I was like, okay, that's fine.
Fair.
The last thing I will say about this hacker guy is that he's very bad at posing actual threats.
Yes.
Like, I feel like if he was taking personal website addresses that people use for their businesses or to present themselves to the world, then he should have a much more inflammatory image on there so that people are like, oh, I hope that nobody who goes to AaronLammer.com is going to see like a picture of X, terrible beheading or like anything that nobody actually wants to see.
I feel like he was kind of hinting at that because he kept saying like, I'm going to do do horrible things to you on a hacker forum if you don't like listen to me. And I was like, you need to be more specific than this. Like a 1990s hacker forum or
yeah. Well, are you afraid at all now?
I wasn't, and then when I saw that article that Adrian wrote about it in The Verge went up, I was like, I'm not worried about that guy, but I'm like worried about some other hacker seeing it now and being like, oh, I'm really gonna get this guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, they all have hacker solidarity. They have to stand up for the other hackers.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like in like Revenge of the Nerds. Like I like fucked with the nerds, and like now I'm like expecting my return prank or something.
They're gonna like all show up in matching suits. In marching scene.
More likely,
like
I'm probably just gonna get like swatted or something.
Well, just make sure that I'm not here when you get swatted. Speaking of SWAT, actually, it's a terrible segue.
No,
but
don't say that.
Stephon Marbury, right?
Speaking of celebrity ICOs, I feel like that's just a transition we could use at any juncture.
So Stephon Marbury was in the news today. The Undefeated at ESPN wrote an article about it. They said that he has joined China's Sun Seven Stars Investment Group as chairman of its new sports blockchain group. Now, Aaron, what is a sports blockchain, do you think?
Okay, a few things here. One, for our non-basketball-inclined listeners, Stephon Marbury, New York Knicks legend.
New York City legend.
New York City legend.
Coney Island Lincoln High, right?
Yeah.
Georgia Tech, one of the great... I would say the last of his breed of a high scoring, does not pat. Well, I guess we have Russell Westbrook now, but sort of solidly built New York City playground legend making it to the NBA.
Affordable basketball sneaker legend.
Yes.
Entrepreneur.
Entrepreneur, Chinese basketball legend.
Okay, a few things here. One, when we handicapped which athlete is going to be the next to do an ICO? Shame on us for ignoring Stephon Marbury.
Wait, we already did that? Who was number one?
It was Manny Pacquiao. Was the front runner. But
Stephon Marbury came close with that one because Floyd did it and then got shut down. So Stephon seems a little bit more legitimate than Floyd's. He seems to have the backing of very rich Chinese people, which isn't surprising given his stature over there.
This is Neo Project?
I don't think it is a Neo Project. I can't really figure it out, which is not surprising given what a blockchain thing is.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is essentially that he is going to create a network of content in which you can access your favorite athlete's content and pay through like a coin, and that's the blockchain. So
In China.
So if like...
It's for your favorite Chinese athletes.
If there is a Kevin Durant of China.
Yes.
And he, instead of putting a video on Instagram being like, hey, here I am in the gym striving for greatness, he puts it behind a paywall, and the only way that you can access it is through this ICO coin.
I'm going to tell you, there is a Kevin Durant of China.
His name
is Stephon Marbury.
Stephon Marbury.
He was the finals MVP 3 seasons ago, and he is 41 now, which means he was a finals MVP at 38. Put that in your pipe and smoke.
Well, this, I would say, is very similar to every other blockchain publishing idea that's been out there. Do you see any sort of future for this?
I thought that he was going to involve, that it was some sort of like a Chinese crypto or like team and player owner futures. Because he kind of says something like that.
Okay, I'm going to read what he says.
Okay.
Okay. We need to have a friendly service, and blockchain creates that for companies and humans to interact with each other, to be able to buy things without going through middlemen. It creates an open platform, but a truth platform. It allows you to do what you want to do and create what you want to create. It allows athletes an opportunity to be their own.
Only the last sentence was
sounds
the one
like
thing
he's selling merch,
that.
you know, and that you have to buy the merch with like Marbury coin.
It seems
no?
like he's selling vitamins or something.
Yeah, or like
it allows you to own your own business.
It's like Fit Tea or something like that, like that you have to buy with Starberry coin.
Well, he also says the group recently signed a deal with Fighting Spirit, the world's largest fighting event media rights agency and distribution company, for the joint founding of a blockchain-based global fighting digital asset platform. That's just a horrifying idea.
What does that mean?
I don't think that MMA and the blockchain should mix. I feel like it's too volatile. The investing pools are too similar.
Okay, so here's the last part of it, and this is the one part I was actually interested in. Meanwhile, he said he is part of a budding 3-on-3 basketball reality television show in China that is expected to be aired through China's Hunan television and video hosting service Youku after shooting in July.
I really like the name.
Marbury said Brooklyn Nets guard Jeremy Lin and Taiwanese singer and actor Jay Chou are expected to be involved as well. The Chinese participants will live in a house and be trained before eventually coming to play in the United States, possibly at famed Rucker Park in New York City. I have to bring 3-on-3 to China, Marbury said. The name of the show is in Chinese, but it translates loosely in English to Dunk Boys.
Okay, Jay, first of all, I think this is a great Times Magazine story where you go and follow this Chinese 3-on-3 team before they come to Rucker Park and have the most awkward interaction possible.
I would do it, but I feel like Wells Tower kind of closed the book on Stephon Marbury.
It's true.
China.
It's true. Stephon Marbury profile well has been sapped dry.
Yeah, there was only room for one, and it was a pretty good one.
I like one of the other things they said was that he was debating whether the 3-on-3 format would be half or full court. You know you're not that far along if you haven't decided whether it's half court or not.
I would say that of all the ideas that Stefan is putting out there right now, that this is by far the best one.
Yeah, agreed.
I would love to see the Dunk Boys in Rucker Park.
Totally agreed. Yeah. All right. Before we bring on our guest, I just want to play one clip for you for your reaction, okay?
Okay.
I also want to talk about Harriet Tubman on $20 bill.
We're following you. We're following you all. You set it up good.
Okay. That was the moment that I wanted to use Bitcoin, and I saw Harriet Tubman on $20 bill.
Why?
It's like when you just see like all the slave movies, it's like, why you gotta keep reminding us about slavery? Why don't you show us, put Michael Jordan on a $20 bill?
But Harriet Tubman was the slave who rebelled though. Like her and Nat Turner in a different frequency though. They kind of were like you when you say you didn't feel like being controlled.
Okay, your reaction, J.K.?
I can't react at this point.
I don't want to react either, but I want to say, if you had told me 6 months ago that Kanye West would repeatedly mention Bitcoin decentralization and burning the Excel spreadsheet and that it would not move the market at all, I would have said you were crazy.
Has it not moved the market?
No, we're pretty flat.
I mean, I have two questions, honestly. The first is that, as we know, Kanye is recording an album with Nas.
Yeah,
right?
He's recording 5 albums, including one with Nas.
Nas.
I know which one you're most hotly anticipating.
Well, I don't know. The recent news about Nas has deflated some of my enthusiasm.
Fair
But Nas is a huge Bitcoin guy, early investor in Coinbase.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if Nas was the one that influenced Kanye to buy Bitcoin.
I like the way this conspiracy is going. I'm hoping it involves other people going forward and that it spreads far and wide.
Well, because remember when all the NBA players were talking about Bitcoin for a while?
And I think there was a ripple in the NFL too when Richard Sherman was deep on it.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if there's like a Bitcoin whisperer that goes around and talks to like famous athletes and musicians about Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, that was how like when people first all got on Twitter, I remember there was like a guy in LA who like got celebrities and athletes onto Twitter. There is some sort of a radicalization process by which famous people are like getting their first Coinbase wallet. And I wonder who the plug is.
Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah. He's come up before as the link.
My guess would be Ashton Kutcher. Okay. What do all these people have in common? Ashton Kutcher.
I think the first time when we start getting big celebrity guests on, we'll ask them who gave them their first Bitcoin.
It's either Ashton Kutcher or Lil Wayne. One of the two. All right. So should we introduce our guest?
This is Brady Dale.
Hey,
welcome,
guys.
From CoinDesk.
The esteemed CoinDesk.
Industry leader. Brady, I actually don't know. I knew you before your coin days.
Uh-huh.
How did you get involved in coin reporting?
So I was a general tech reporter, and at the time I was reporting for The Observer on technology in general, and I was super interested in ebooks. I was the one reporter who was not being like, ebooks are going to die any day now. You know, I was like, no, they're actually doing really great. And so
you
I was
went
about,
from like a really unpopular trend to a really popular trend.
Ebooks did?
Ebooks to crypto.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
quite
right.
A swing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, ebooks are very popular in their world. And only growing. Don't believe the hype. So I was interested in that, but I did acknowledge that there were some downsides ebooks had over regular books. And one of them, you know, people would talk about this, is you can't lend them, you can't sell them. You know, you really just lease an ebook from Amazon or whatever your e-reader provider is. And so I thought that was a problem and technology could probably solve it. And then I saw that Imogen Heap was doing the Mycelium project to like give people a way to actually own MP3s and sort of track who owned them and sort of like log the story with the file. And I thought, oh, if you could do that with MP3s, you could do it with books and like, you know, a Kindle would be a natural wallet and whatever. And so that just led me down this chain. And so I started with, you know, I was much more interested in blockchain applications than, you know, cryptocurrency money when I first came to it.
We're just going to run through like a host of topics with you.
Yeah.
In the hopes that you know a little bit more than Aaron and I. But
okay.
One thing that we wanted to talk about at first was something that Aaron and I have, I think, the bane of part of our existence, mm-hmm. probably between about 7 p.m. and about maybe like 1:30 of the morning, because right now it's the NBA playoffs, and I don't know if you stream basketball, but if you stream basketball, you are aware that there's only really one ad that ever plays when you stream sports. This happens to me too when I watch baseball streaming, is that they have one ad. It's generally a Downy ad, and then they play like weird highlights from last season as well. But in the NBA, they have chosen a very interesting ad to play every single time there's a timeout or halftime or quarter break, which is the IBM blockchain ad.
Now, these ads are already, in my opinion, a form of torture.
Uh-huh.
And
Hulu does this too.
Total Hulu material. It's hilarious also when people act like, oh, there's all these untapped advertising markets out uh-huh. there, when people aren't even really bothering to sell ads on like NBA playoff game
right.
streaming rights. But we should have known, Jay, when we did that blockchain episode, and we used the IBM blockchain as our example of a corporate blockchain that doesn't make any sense, that we would have to watch an ad for it 10,000 times.
Yeah, we made a lot of fun of the marketing department. I think our vision of what the IBM blockchain department was like was that there were 10 engineers sitting around playing ping pong, and that there are 50 marketing people working very, very hard to make this one ad. So
yeah.
Do we have the audio of it, Aaron?
Yeah, let's. Oh, we're going to play it here, okay?
This is a tomato you can track from farm to pot, to jar, to table, and serve with confidence that it's safe. This is a diamond you can follow from mine to finger, and trust it never fell into the wrong hands. This is a shipment transferred 200 times, transparently tracked from port to port. This is the IBM blockchain, built for smarter business, built to run on the IBM cloud.
Brady, your impressions of this advertisement?
Well, I mean, big picture, you know, I think I don't really cover enterprise, but I do think just these big companies, they just want to occupy some mind share on blockchain because they have big computers. They want to sell you one way or another. And if this whole thing takes off, that, you know, they want you to rent their computers to do whatever. I do like watching the ad. I think there's some relevance to the whole idea of using blockchain to track the provenance of an item. I think it especially makes sense for the luxury goods market. I've did a little writing in the past about that. So I don't think it's crazy, but I don't really think that's what it's about for IBM either. I just think they want you to you know, I think they want some number of large companies who eventually do blockchain applications to come to them. And that's the reason, my guess.
So it's like a white label kind of product that they're going to try to sell to enterprises. Like the examples in this are tomatoes and it appears conflict diamonds.
I mean, I think maybe, though I don't cover it, I do know that one of the larger fights that's going on in crypto right now is just this whole like private chain versus public chain things. And, you know, a lot of the big companies don't really trust the public chains. They're doing private chains. A bunch of them are kind of coming around on public chains. So I think it's that. But I honestly look at it a little bit more cynically. You know, I don't really think IBM cares if you are, I don't know, and I haven't covered it, but I don't think IBM cares if you are psyched about their Provenance application. I just think they've got a bunch of cloud servers and engineers to rent out and, you know.
Sales and marketing guys employed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and are we sure they're all private blockchains? Because the phrase that they keep using is the IBM blockchain on the IBM cloud, right?
Yeah.
Well, then so that would almost certainly be private, yeah.
So, no, but not that. But couldn't it just be one massive blockchain that is used by all these different things and that you could buy into the IBM blockchain?
Well, I was thinking that is it like a sort of like a Ethereum kind of thing where there's the like IBM blockchain and then you've got like your conflict diamond non or not conflict diamonds chain going on that, like an ERC-20 tokens relationship to the Ethereum chain.
I mean, my guess is the way they do it is they would just have one big blockchain and they would build a particular, you know, interface for whatever industry wanted to log their stuff on there, and IBM would run all the nodes and, you know.
Yeah,
I kind of get it, I guess, like where, like, you know, one of the things that I always think about in terms of the immediate blockchain application is buying art, right?
Yeah.
So like I sometimes buy art.
Yeah.
And I know that it's
Art
real.
Art Kang in the house recently.
Art Kang is in the house. Art Baron Kang.
Art Baron.
I buy some art too.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason why I know it's good, it's real, is because I buy it from artists who would have, there's nobody who's ever going to fake the art that they make. And, you know, like it's not a thing. Right. But if I become crypto rich or if I, you know, if I start trying to buy things that are more expensive, then I would want some sort of verification that it's real.
Right.
And so like, if we could go build a blockchain that retroactively could go back in time, you could actually figure out if like something that was painted by Leonardo da Vinci, where it went throughout its journey. My parents actually very weirdly went through a version of this where my mom found like an ancient Chinese scroll in a thrift shop in Washington State. I'm not kidding. And it was very...
How racist would this story be if you weren't telling it?
How is that racist?
I'm just saying, if I was like, my mom found an ancient Chinese scroll in like a thrift store, you would be clowning at me.
Really? Okay. I feel like the Jews have a long history of
buying ancient
Chinese
scrolls.
We found
many scrolls.
Yes. I would say I might be racist against Jews, but not against Asians.
Okay, so your mom's
very typical.
Your mom's in a thrift store and she finds an ancient scroll.
She found
a real
ancient scroll. Yes. And she looked at it. My dad looked at it. They're both retired, so they had a lot of time. They looked at all the stamps. They looked at the brush technique. And they were convinced that they had found like a masterpiece that might be worth somewhere up to like between like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to many millions of dollars. You can't tell.
Really hoping the story ends on Antiques Roadshow.
Well, that's what I suggested. So what they ultimately did was that they took it to actual experts in the Seattle area who were like, actually, this seems like it's real in some ways, but we just don't know what it really is.
Uh-huh.
And if it's from the 17th century, then it's worth this much. If it's from the 16th century, then it could be worth actually millions of dollars.
We don't know what its haunted powers really are.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's a little racist, Aaron. I'm glad that you pushed it there and that okay. So we've gotten to that point. Your mom would be fine, but yes, haunted powers are not good. It's not like a fucking secret monkey scroll.
Yeah.
So they brought it to Christie's here in New York.
Yeah.
And the woman at Christie's basically said, this is from either the 17th century or 16th century. I don't really know. But the only way that we could do it is that we would need a quorum of experts to decide what it was, you know?
Yeah.
And the reason why they can't know what it is because there's no way to track where it was.
Right.
So it turns out that my parents either have a scroll that's worth, you know, like maybe $1,000 or $800, or it's worth $20 million. And there's no way to tell the difference between what sells for $20 million. I will say that in that instance, if you could retroactively go back and blockchain, like explain where every single place where this thing was, that would be helpful. And if you started it now, that would be helpful.
Well, and even, you know, like I was thinking Christie's when you said it, because like the Christie's didn't know for sure with that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things Christie's could pretty confidently say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, and that could be a service for them. It's like, oh, you bring a thing to Christie's and we log, you know, we log a record. Christie's yeah. saw this
like
thing. And
Birkin like, bags or something like yeah, that, exactly. which is something that they sell. They really actually could use this sort of blockchain application.
Yeah.
The one thing that, and Aaron, this is something you and I talk about quite a bit, which is that, look, this is all great, you know, in theory, but it does kind of rely on a certain number of good actors at every single place. And yep. That's a part that
is. Well, this is why I think luxury is the best place to start, because
that's where all the most honest business people are.
yeah, and the least forgeries.
well, no. So like, so the reason why luxury is, I mean, look, I think the luxury industry is ridiculous. And I don't know why anyone, you know, pays these sums. But if you're going to, there are two people in the luxury chain that have a strong incentive, and that's the originators, you know, Louis Vuitton or yep. Hermes. Did I say they're Hermes, however you say that? They want you to know that stuff is theirs, and so they will authenticate the stuff that really comes from them. And then, of course, the consumers ultimately buy it, want it, and the consumers ultimately buy it also have an incentive to maintain it, because they're going to probably resell it eventually, and if they have, they can really show the provenance, it'll retain more value. So unlike art, which the origins are lost, and you just sort of have to trust people, you know, the people who made this stuff originally will have a very strong incentive to log where things came from and to really undermine all the, you know, the phony stuff out there. So I think it's a good application there.
Yeah, yeah. And the part that was most striking, I want to point out, I want to just say that, like, this was not a real painting, right? Like, it was worth like $1,000 is I think what they said it was. But the part that was interesting to me was I was asking the woman, who was at Christie's, who's the expert about it, I was like, well, why wouldn't you just get a quorum together, you know, and the yeah. person who has it just pay everyone $1 million and sell the thing for $8 million
Art and Kang pocket Industries.
The
five?
No, that's what I mean. So that, but that's the type of thing where it's just like you can't really rely on the actors yeah. to authenticate this thing, and it doesn't yeah. seem like blockchain would really solve that, you know?
No, especially when we're talking about like conflict diamonds. It's like, oh, everything's been logged in the chain here. Oh, look, this is not a conflict diamond.
Yeah, exactly.
Like limited edition things make sense to me, because it's like you put them all on the chain and then they're tracked forever. Things like tomatoes, all you feels like you're doing with the blockchain is like what the same thing as like when a package is coming from UPS, where it just says where it's been. And it's like, well, how do I know it's been there? It's like, well, someone scanned the barcode. It's like that in the sense of my package, I believe, but that's not an incorruptible system that's going to stop something like the conflict diamond industry. It feels like in Bitcoin, there's all these double checks and there's miners and there's all these things that are ensuring the incorruptibleness of the system. And I don't really see that in like private business blockchains, which makes me wonder whether they have that much application outside of these like niche areas that we've been talking about, which maybe aren't that niche. Yeah. You know, it's not like art's a small market. Jay, now that we have Art Kang in the house, are you going to start pump and dump scheming artists?
Oh my God. You're going to like buy up like dream. Well, I used to have one dream in life, and it was to make completely useless camping material for wealthy white people to buy, like Arc'teryx or something like that. And I would just charge like $600 for a jacket. And I'd be like, this thing has these five materials, and it would just be made out of like a, you know, I'd buy like a rain jacket at the dollar store and sell it to them.
Weirdly specific life goal for someone who's pursued journalism.
Yeah, no, it was a great, that was, but then my new life goal is to be part of art pump and dump schemes.
Yeah.
You know, where I use my journalistic influence to pump up an artist, and then yeah. I secretly have, or maybe I employ Aaron
yeah.
in this, and Aaron secretly has all that guy's paintings, and then we put up a show and no one knows
they're
that
all
Aaron
stored
and
in
I
the crypto cave, and then it floods in here and they're all destroyed after we've pumped them yeah. through the roof.
Yeah, there is space in here to run an art pump and dump. That's
look,
for yeah.
sure. That's what all these tools are for.
Okay.
When yeah. you told me that all those poker guys were like involved in art pump and dumps, I was like, you told me they were all
allegedly.
In crypto. I was
allegedly.
Like, oh, that. Yeah, of course. Like, yes. I already knew that. I should have already known that. When you told me art pump and dumps, I was like, whoa, there's a whole secret world out there that I can't even fathom.
I mean, the common thread, though, is like, you just want to run a big hustle. Right?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, you definitely should just do an ICO of some kind. I mean, like, you don't worry about art.
Kang coin.
Yeah.
Back oh, it's coming. Kang coin is coming.
What about back in time coin? BITC.
BITC, yes. The BITC art coin.
Back in time coin for all your Chinese scroll needs.
All right, so let's move. Speaking of shady stuff,
yeah.
Let's move on to this next story, which is that Japan's financial regulator is pushing crypto exchanges to drop altcoins. I don't know why the quote is in there. Favored by criminals.
So-called altcoins.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's like a Carl's thing, like hipster runoff. The list, of course, here is like Monero, Zcash, Dash, I think Verge, right?
Yeah.
What effect do you think this is going to have, like this sort of push to sort of label some things good coins and label some things bad coins?
Yeah. Used to be the shit coins, but now it's the good and bad coins.
Yeah, bad coin.
Well, bad because they protect people's privacy, right? Which like freaks the state out. So if they're bad because they're good at that, then they are effective at this thing. So yeah, I mean, it could spur a lot of interest. I mean, on some level, it's like the Streisand effect of crypto. You know, it's like a big endorsement of how well these things work, at least for now.
Wait, what is a Streisand effect?
Oh, the Streisand effect. It's the general concept is the idea is if you tell someone to take something, like to hide something, especially on the internet, it'll just draw more attention to it. So like there was somebody who was taking a bunch of aerial photos and like logging them on some site. And they just sort of, you know, quietly took all these photos of like the Florida coast and Barbara Streisand's home was in there. And no one had really noticed it. It was just like, you know, whatever. But Barbara Streisand found out her home was photographed in there. So she tried to do some lawsuit or whatever to get.
I think it was Malibu, actually.
Okay.
And then she tried to get like a state law that was like no aerial photography.
Of Barbara Streisand's house?
Yeah. And then everyone was like, and her house is here. The house that's at the center of this lawsuit, which is right here.
And so like it went from like whatever that, it probably was Malibu. All those like fancy rich people like buy water places are the same in my brain. But. So it went from a photo that like, you know, 1,000 people had seen to a photo like millions of people.
Yeah, like the Beyonce bad photos effect.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
That should be the new word, the bad Beyonce photo effect.
Bad Beyonce photo effect. Well, what I wonder with this case of Monero, I mean, I think we can all agree this is great for decentralized exchanges. Like the world that decentralized exchanges imagined is here.
Uh-huh.
But it also feels a little bit like 2018 is the year of the good and bad cryptos. Like, if 2017 was the year of the forks, it seems like everyone's trying to, whether it's like securities regulation in the US that's trying to divide Bitcoin from some of these scammier ICOs, or here it's like privacy versus non-privacy coins. I wonder, as we start divvying them up, whether the ultimate winner is just Bitcoin, because Bitcoin always lands in the good pool. Any divide you have, even Ethereum can be suspect, but no one ever seems to think that Bitcoin is amongst the bad crypto.
Well, they don't like it. They just don't feel like they can stop it. And the big joke is going to be, you know, you guys had Jameson Lopp on, and I'm pretty sure it was on the show you was talking about that, is that what folks don't realize is that, you know, technology comes in layers and platforms come in layers. And so like, let's say, I don't think they can, I don't think the state can do this, but let's say the big governments of the world, you know, do beat Monero, they do beat Zcash, they all get knocked down. By the time that happens, which they can't do it quickly, there'll be layers built on top of Bitcoin that will make it feasible to do the same thing with Bitcoin.
Right.
You know, like it'll just, so sorry, yeah, I mean, again.
It doesn't feel like the current status of Bitcoin privacy is sustainable. Just earlier in the show, we were talking about me getting hacked and we were able to look into the wallet address of the person who is ransoming me. I just feel like in 2 years, when I'm getting Bitcoin ransomed again, because now there's a Verge article about me getting Bitcoin ransomed, I assume that I won't be able to peer into the person ransoming me's wallet, whether that's because it's a Monero wallet or because Bitcoin has in some way obscured wallets in that sort of a way. I feel like it's almost like I don't really feel a need to gamble between those two outlooks. I just am like, hold some Bitcoin, hold some Monero, like just keep on holding, because it just seems like there has to be a privacy component.
Yeah. There's no outcome here where I feel like Monero and these privacy coins are going to be defeated. This push to label things bad coins.
Yeah.
In a world with decentralized exchanges, in a world where people still are using Bitcoin to ransom people's websites and to like do credit card fraud, everything like that, right? Being a bad coin is actually good.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not like it shows that the coin has some sort of utility that the state is afraid of. It
shows it's dangerous.
Yeah. And if I was going to pick between two projects and one of them is like five guys backed by Peter Thiel who are in Silicon Valley and Mark Andreessen, and they're like, you know, like they have like a, they have nice offices, they have a cappuccino machine, they play ping pong, and they like go to VC conferences, and like the cool bad guy coin. I'm always going to pick the cool bad guy coin, you know, like, and I think that most people in crypto are like that. And I do think that crypto probably isn't big enough yet where like that effect of the people who want the sort of destabilizing thing, they're still going to have an effect. It's not all institutional money yet, you know? So I think that, this push to sort of squash bad coins is just never going to work. I can't see a scenario where it works.
Could it be a bullish sign for Monero and Zcash? I mean, I feel like it's crowning them as the like next generation of crypto. Like crypto used to be dangerous. Now it's more sanitized. If you want the like one that people are still worried about, here's what it is.
Yeah.
Like this is the thing that actually worries states. And I just can't believe that, like, I just don't think, I agree with you. Ideologically, the people who come to crypto are not people who want to give up their privacy rights. I think that people who came to Bitcoin probably assumed that it was private. And when they find out that it's not private, they're going to want it to be private.
Right.
And either that means that Bitcoin goes away eventually because it's not private, or it just means that Bitcoin figures it out. Both, same endpoint for Japan, though.
This is probably the single nerdiest thing I can say on here, but I
doubt that's true. Well,
it's gonna be tin-eared. I think it's gonna come off as you are an old man, Brady. But but what I keep waiting for with crypto is, and what I don't understand is why it hasn't become like cooler with some group of youths somewhere in the world, you know?
Well, the alt-right loves it.
I think that, Korean teens also seem.
Oh, they do.
The alt-right Korean teens. Yeah, that's
I don't really like think the two major is really youths though. I think they're just but the Korean teens.
I mean, they're youths in that they live at their parents' house,
right?
They're not
right. And they just accidentally like
going after Aaron. I disavow everything Aaron said about the alt right right now. Please do not hack me.
I've made fun of the alt right, because of this, like Japan being like, oh, it's scary. Oh, your parents don't like it. Like, you know, and you can buy drugs with it. Like, I just don't understand why, like, just a bunch of young people aren't like, oh, you still use cash, you know?
Yeah.
It just seems like it should happen any minute.
I does, like, we heard about, like, in Korea, there's, like, student groups that are, like, super dedicated to it.
I think the States, too.
Yeah, and, like, these things are weird. It's like Reddit seems like a weird niche subculture until you find out that, like, a third of America is on Reddit all the time. Yeah. You know, like I, you might not be running in Ethereum teen circles. You know,
I'm definitely not. But I just like you just don't hear about that facet of it. It feels like that would have registered, you know, at CoinDesk or with you.
I agree with you. I feel like there's going to be some feeling of peak crypto, and we're not there yet. Like there's going to be some thing where you like just see kids doing something with crypto that like you didn't imagine, then you're gonna realize that there's like new heights to
like
it.
And they're gonna cool be like, viral
oh, you're still
video?
Using Zcash.
Yeah,
like
a Bcash rap song or something. That
there's
be
been
crazy.
A lot of great rap songs, but
yeah, those are
a lot of good rap songs.
You have like Tekashi 6ix9ine do a Bitcoin rap song or a Monero rap song. Yeah, that might work. All right. So speaking of ICO scams.
Yes.
The next piece of news I think we have, which is from the CFTC, which right now is sort of crowned as the good government agency by a lot of people in crypto. And it's they're offering a reward for ICO scam whistleblowers. And so they're saying that if you have some information, and it's original information, I think we should highlight that, that leads to a successful enforcement action that leads to monetary sanctions of $1 million or more, you could be eligible for a monetary award between 10 and 30%, right? And so this is one of the CFTC's first real actions into regulating ICOs, which is to try and encourage whistleblowers to come forward. I think that this might be capped at, well, like, I guess if it's $1 million or more, it could be capped, and 30%, that could be capped. That could be a large amount of money.
Yeah.
If you told people that about insider trading, like if you turn someone in for insider trading, and you get 10 to 30% of their gains, there'd be a lot of people getting turned in.
Yeah.
Why do you think the CFTC is doing this, Brady? And do you think that this is going to work in any sort of way?
I don't know that you can stop pump and dumps, but do I think there'll be some reports and some of them will be good? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's like you said, it's real money, right? And there's people like, you know, it could just be some guy who's in a co-working space and some like loud group of jerks just keep talking about this like plan they're doing.
These guys keep using the conference room for their ICO and I'm fucking sick of it.
Yeah, I don't know. They're just like, they keep whispering like buy Nerdcoin. I don't know. Yeah, like, So here's the thing I wanted to bring you guys is I talked to this attorney the other day who he told me this interesting fact, which, you know, I haven't reported on this. I haven't written about it. You know, I don't know. This is pure speculation, but he argued that there is a looming turf war between the SEC and the CFTC over who gets tokens. And that the way these turf wars play out is it's not like a meeting at the White House. It's like lawsuits against each other. And so like that may be coming.
The CFTC sues the SEC?
Yeah. So you know, the world can probably get something wrong here and, you know, people tell me an idiot. But like, as I understand it, like the big case was the Chicago Board of Trade versus the SEC, which that's what kind of delineated the fact that the CFTC manages derivatives in general, the SEC manages. There's some weird things in there. It's like not 100% cut and dry. But that came through a bunch of court cases in the 80s. There was a big fight in court over who got that chunk of regulatory territory. And so he argues a similar thing is coming out. Like they seem to be playing nice now, and everyone's looking at the SEC. So what this effort could be about is an effort to begin laying the groundwork for being to showing that they're doing work in this space that makes them.
So Giancarlo, Giancarlo, the sort of white knight of crypto, might be rope-a-doping us.
It's sort of like if there's like a homicide investigation and it like could fall in two jurisdictions, and it's like, let's bring in some suspects.
Yeah,
because then we'll the local the police are like,
these fuckers from the FBI keep stepping on our
feet. You're a loose cannon, Kang. Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't know if it's a rope-a-dope,
like Sicario.
Though, because I feel like folks think that if the CFTC got their hands on it, and this is all just pure speculation, but if the CFTC got their hands on tokens, that yeah, you know, they would aggressively slam a bunch of scams and fake coins and whatever, but that some people believe, you know, there's been some recent statements from some members of the commission that sort of suggest that it might be the agency that's a little bit more open to letting, like, for example, the idea of a utility token play itself out and see people sort of like experiment and play around a little bit. Whereas the SEC seems, again, most of the reporting about the SEC is like kind of bad because it'll say things like the SEC is not so sure. It's like, well, the SEC actually hasn't said anything besides the chairman, you know, making some hints, but nothing official. They haven't said anything official. But I think most people think the SEC is going to be a bit more skeptical of like the idea of the utility token. So if this effort enabled the CFTC to get in, like they might be more open-minded about, for example, you know, like a Filecoin.
Well, I don't know this that much about this stuff, but it seems like that the SEC, because they also regulate other publicly traded markets, they don't want to set up some sort of a parallel where it's like, it's cool for crypto, but it's not cool for your whatever exchange. Like mm-hmm. many of the things that crypto wants would never be acceptable on stock markets.
Uh-huh.
And this like all comes down to these like good coin, bad coin. Like, what is a pump and dump? Could I just report every coin on Cryptopia as being a pump and dump?
Right.
Potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope this fight does happen.
Yeah.
Because like Aaron and I always think about what good crypto movies would be. And I do think a good crypto movie would be like the CFTC and the SEC fighting to like, you know, that there's like a renegade dangerous coin that is like defrauding millions of investors.
Well, and there
it
would
might be funneling money to like ISIS.
Or it would be about that one really good project, which is their effort to prove like you.
It's not a good movie.
You know, the heroic first strategy.
I thought you were going to say it's like me and you do a pump and dump ICO together. And then at the last second, I turn you in, you know, for the money. Like, and it was all a setup where I got you to do the pump and dump. And then I like whistle blew on you for it.
Yeah.
And I'm like living in St. Kitts with Roger Ver. You're in jail.
Let's move on to our last topic.
Wait, could I ask one more question on the ICO talk? Because ICOs are kind of like your beat, right?
Well, right. Let me offer a thought here my big thought on ICOs. So, you know, what I write about in ICOs, like my focus on is kind of, we're talking good and bad, is I really, if I'm writing about it, unless there's some exceptional circumstance, it's a project that looks credible and is well thought through, and people are doing it in good faith.
If it's a scam, it's at least well hidden.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I don't tend to do the like sketchy ICO stories or like the, you know, the like people who are just obvious idiots or whatever. Like that's not what I do.
Those people are emailing you all the time.
Though, oh, right? Yeah. No,
your
I hear,
email box must be,
oh my God,
filthy.
I can't
it's
even
so,
imagine.
It's disgusting.
It's so disgusting. It's like when, honestly, I mean, if you know, Flax listening out there, if you email me, that's not, that's a, I'm less likely to write about it, to be honest. Like, it's
so you
not,
don't look at its inbound interest as ever a way that's you're going to start writing.
It's pretty rare. Like, I'm not saying never.
Yeah,
you know, I got
to write a really good email to Brady. He might write about your ICO.
Yeah, it's it's unlikely. It's like, honestly, I need to hear about it randomly. I'm more or investors talking about what I care about. But anyway, but my point is,
and you listen to this podcast. Wow. ICO makers.
No, you guys are
at cointalk.show for sponsors out there.
And KangCoin is coming.
Lots of journalists listen to the show. I'm just saying.
What is helpful about listening to you guys is because, you know, we kind of aren't really allowed to trade. Like, I don't really have much perspective on trading. So I listen to you guys and, like, sort of kind of get it. Anyway, so my point is.
You want a perspective on bad trading? Yeah. You're like, what would happen to me if I traded as an amateur? Oh, terrible things? Okay.
Yeah. Like, I came to this as a technology reporter, and I'm really, I like technology on balance, and there's a lot of awful behavior out there, and people take you off, and I think on balance sort of makes the world better, and, like, I see a lot of promise for a lot of these good faith projects and the things they're doing. I think, I don't know if they're going to, like, end world hunger, but they certainly will make the world more fun and more interesting in, like, nice ways, and they'll undermine some companies that have gotten irritating, like Facebook, you know, like, so... I find all of this very appealing, but none of it works if we can't have utility tokens. And so, like, that's what I get frustrated about and get a little annoyed at people who constantly, like, sort of love to sort of push this whole line of, like, tokens should have just been securities all along anyway. I mean, A, if that's the case, this industry will just develop in other countries. It'll happen more slowly, and it won't work as well, but it will get there, and we'll just miss out on it, and then eventually we'll follow along. But... I would rather it happen more quickly, and it's just, and if we focus too much on all the garbage out there and make the rules around that, we're just going to miss out on the ways in which these good faith projects can just make the world a cooler and more functional place. And I think that would be, I want that to happen.
Okay, so you're the perfect person to ask, because we've always struggled with this. You said, basically, like, it would be cool if utility tokens work.
Yeah.
And my whole impression from reading about a gazillion ICOs and kind of, like, the whole cultural history of this era is there was projects like Bitcoin that did not require any capital to get off the ground. And then eventually people started making crypto projects. So they're like, hey, this is kind of like a startup. Like, we need to, like, pay ourselves and have a foundation.
Yeah.
And so... they did ICOs.
Yeah.
And then they were like, and also like a utility token, because the whole economy of this wouldn't work if it. And then people started speculating on those utility tokens. Why do utility tokens have to work, in your opinion? Like, why do they need to exist for this whole, all this cool stuff to happen?
Well, so, I mean, I'm going to give a little bit of a cop-out answer.
Yeah.
Every time a new phase of technology comes along, at the moment at which it really starts to work, people are doing things that nobody foresaw.
Sure.
So at the moment at which we really get why utility tokens were a great idea, we're gonna be like, no, nobody would have ever even thought of that. Like, you know, in 2017.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. You know, this idea, for example, a thing I am pretty excited about, and I think utility tokens are helpful with, and it doesn't have to be utility tokens. I mean, there's a level on which Ether could just be the utility token for everything, you know, maybe, but things like content monetization on the internet, I think that can work a lot better if you have, like, little tiny chunks of money. Does it have to be a utility token? I don't know. But what's nice about a utility token is you are able to create this multi-leveled community, which all has aligned incentives, and if they're all using the exact same thing, and perhaps it is more powerful if, for example, you're doing a file storage thing, say, for example, like the Filecoin example. You know, people like to make jokes about CryptoKitties, but I think CryptoKitties is perhaps starting to point us in the direction of what utility tokens are so powerful for, because CryptoKitties is this funny cat game, but it's also, it's this immutable object that only exists one time but can interact with other immutable objects.
Yeah.
Like, that could end up being really powerful. It could be useful for things like tracking property out here in the real world, but could also, that's the kind of thing that, you know, you can't imagine what it is, but you could feel that getting, like, pretty compelling later on, you know? Yeah. Like, that's why I get sort of psyched about this stuff and sort of feel like there's a lot of possibilities here, and everyone's obsession on, like, the garbage side of this industry bums me out, because it's just like, that seems to be the wrong part of it to think about.
Let me ask you a question, because I know you've written a lot about the Telegram ICO.
Yes.
And that's the opposite of the garbage side. It's like the most prestige Well, in a way.
What? At least, have we been sponsored by Telegram? You didn't?
It's a solo deal. They only wanted me. They didn't want you in on it. No. Okay. I'm gonna elaborate on that.
Okay.
It's very big.
Very big.
It's not just an. It's not an outright scam. Like mm-hmm. Telegram's a real app. There's a real product.
Yeah.
Et cetera. And it seemed like in that case, and correct me if I'm wrong, they started off down the ICO path that we're describing uh-huh. with a utility token.
Yeah.
And then when they realized that they could easily get all the money they needed without going down that path, they basically canceled the original ICO and just went with a bunch of individual investors.
Well, everyone's doing this now, but it's still, this is a funny thing in the term. I mean, we still call it ICO. I mean, it's still a coin offering. They just only give it to rich people.
Yeah.
There was no public sale, but it's still the same token. It's still grams. It's still envisioned as a utility token.
How is this like utility token future going to unfold if Roman Abramovich or whoever got like all of the Telegram ICO is sitting on like 25% of the world's gram supply?
Well, hardly. This is what's crazy about that is like, I mean, hardly, I don't think, I've run these numbers before, but I don't think we've yet sold 50% of the grams anyway. But the way that they'll come out is all these rich people who bought them is just like, you know, as they get in more demand and the price goes up, then they'll just put their grams in the market. So I don't, you know. But
you're not worried then that like those sorts of massive dumps by huge, huge investors is going to like destroy that type of market and attract interest from regulators? Because like that, I mean, that, yes, I think in a sort of anarcho-capitalist world, that makes sense. But, you know, in a world in which people are trying to invest good faith in good faith projects, that does seem a bit dangerous to me.
Look, there's a lot of things about this that I think are going to lead to crazy shit shows. Another great example. I mean, I am optimistic about sort of like the long arc of this, but like there's going to be some insanity.
I'm short term, extremely cynical.
I've had some very smart people sort of talk to me about sort of ways in which shady things can happen there. I haven't fully dug into it. I sort of, yeah, that could be weird. You know, one would imagine because they want to preserve the value of what they're doing, they would sell it at a pace that it wouldn't wreck the value. You know, who knows? But another great example, you know, people used to talk about all this money that startup people get, and they do, you know, do get a lot of money ultimately, but it's like you start with like a $50,000 angel round, then you get like a $100,000 seed round, and then maybe like 5 years later, you get $100 million. And people are getting like $100 million just like out of the gate.
Yeah.
And that's still going on. And even if you're not getting 100, you're getting like 10 or 15 million, which is still like year three money.
Yeah.
There's just no way that some giant disasters aren't coming.
Where's the incentivization? When you take a bunch of seed money, there's someone who's like, yo, you better like at least try to make this product or I'm gonna be like fucking pissed off at you. And if you've already got 100, you know, 5, 10, 20, $100 million out of the gate, and not only have you taken the money, it's not from like hundreds of thousands of people who are all going to yell at you and try and come after you. It's from a few billionaires who can easily lose the money. It just seems like it doesn't even have to be a scheme. It's just like a bad way to engineer a company.
Yeah, it was like the day when the ex-head of Ripple was the richest man in the world or whatever. Yeah. Like that, right? Like we had a discussion about it. It was just like, well, what is the incentive to build Ripple at this point? Like, why would he build this bank-to-bank thing or invest a lot of money in it? He's already fucking rich, you know? Yeah. With the Telegram thing, that was my question about it. It was just like, why are they going to build this network at this point? You know, well, like they can do a really shitty job of it and people are already going to be skeptical of it because of the way that they raised money and the amount of money that they raised. And the idea that like people would slowly get into it and they'd try and buy it and that there would be like a measured sell-off of it that would retain the value and then you would have an operating marketplace. It just seems to go against almost everything that has happened in crypto so far.
Look, I'll give the bull case for Telegram, which is not to say that I 100% believe this, but it is of note. I think a part of this is like there's certain projects that came along that were built by people who, you know, like I've met a lot of them, you guys probably have too, who honestly are interested in this because they're interested in it and it's not really about money for them. But like, obviously, if you can raise $100 million, like, why wouldn't you, you know, because you want to, you know, hire a bunch of engineers and whatever. And in a crazy way, the Durovs are a good example of that. Pavel Durov left Russia, you know, kind of run out of Russia with something like $400 million. You know, no one really knows. And he basically spent all that just like running Telegram up to now. This was like my first story on Telegram sort of pointed this out. It's like, if you run the numbers, probably cost X millions a year to run it. He left with like X amount of money. he's probably down to his last like 70 million at this point, or what, you know, who knows? I mean, we don't really know. It's impossible to know. But what we do know is the man spent a lot of money running this app that he has until now never tried to monetize at all. I'm not saying I think Telegram's going to work, and I'm not saying that they aren't like sort of insanely ambitious and sort of like a little bit overconfident. I'm not saying any of that. I think they are those things, but the worst it could possibly be is just the Durams were running a hustle just to make sure that Telegram itself, as we know, it just never goes away because they want it to be there because they want to, you know, keep screwing with nation states, which seems to be a thing that they want to do and that they like doing.
It's a lot easier to believe in these things if there's an independent track record of the person behind them, mm-hmm. and that involves something that's not pure financial upside. Like the way that you situated Telegram there made the ICO seem more legitimate to me than when it's just like, hey, we're pulling the ICO and these people got all the tokens.
Yeah.
How do the gears of the utility tokens on something like TEN start going though? If it's all held by these people, how are people going to start using it if so many of the tokens are just being hoarded?
Well, it's never all held, right? I mean, this is what's interesting. Like, take the Kin token, for example. Like, I didn't really, I just did a thing with it, with Kin invited me in to do an interview with them on stage. And I didn't really.
I don't even know what the Kin token is.
Oh, so Kin is Kix token, as long as we're talking about
messaging. Okay, we've talked about Kix.
Yeah.
Right? Why is Kix token not called Kix?
I don't know. And why does it have a name that is like so painfully similar? So you're just like, Kin, I don't, yeah, whatever. But what's fascinating about how it works, and I didn't really get this until I was talking to Ted, like on stage in front of a bunch of Kick fans recently, is they made a bajillion, you know, Kin tokens, and they sold a ton of them. They sold like just shy of $100 million worth at the time. And so those are all out there, but there's still like a load. I think it's still like 60%. I didn't check the numbers, but a load left in the Kin Foundation. And that will feed out over time as rewards to people who are building things that cause people to spend Kin. And their thing is, and this is pretty fascinating, is they want people to make applications that run on Kin, and their Kin rewards engine will track all those applications and how much Kin is getting spent on them. So like you make an eBay of Kin, you make a sticker sale marketplace of Kin, and every day it will release X amount of Kin and give it to the creators of each of those apps based on how much economic activity each of their apps yielded. So the idea is they don't want people to create apps in which they directly earn Kin themselves. They want them to get paid off of generating activity.
Mm.
So it just feeds it over time. It's sort of the same thing you now, similarly, like they have their props token. Like if that ever starts working, they have a whole ton set aside so that early on as people build new video apps that are using props, it will reward them for generating activity early on and other people who generate, you know, sort of generate, keep people interested and gives it away to the community sort of as an ongoing reward system. And so that gets them circulating. So, and this is always true with ICOs. Like all ICOs always have some pool that's set aside to like go out in some way that's usually not quite so avaricious as just selling it.
Right.
To get that economy going, you know.
I continue to be
there.
I appreciate your enthusiasm and belief in this. I think I just don't want the like Toshi universe where I'm a mechanical Turk worker and my computer's like being leased slightly in the background. Yeah. I'm just kind of like, what, for the like 75 cents I'm gonna go, I don't see myself earning like a living that way.
Well, again, this is another big argument of crypto is like you don't see yourself earning a living, but there could be a lot of folks around the world who 75 cents a day might mean something.
It's hard for me to wrap my head around how all of this stuff is going to somehow shake down to a bunch of people if like we're like super interested in it and we're barely able to do any of this stuff on it.
Well, it's like what you guys talked about last week, right? With like the MUDs, like, you know, like we're all old enough. This, like, I'm not going to defend crypto anymore. Like, whatever.
You did valiantly. Thank you. It's hard to talk positively on this.
But
show.
Here's,
I know the negative vortex that Jay will suck you in.
Yeah, no, and I buy it. But I guess here's the thing: we're all old enough. This is my thing. This is like my real argument for crypto, and has been my repeated argument my whole life. Is we're all old enough. All of us probably graduated high school without email addresses, right? Like, I mean, I did.
I think I got email in high school.
I had AIM.
Okay. Yeah. You're all right. AOL kids. Cool. So you had AIM. You know, I didn't see the internet for the first time until I like started my freshman year of college. We've all seen the world completely change like about four times, you know, since we graduated high school. And it's just like, it, for me, I have never seen a technology get as far as crypto has without it becoming A, very real, and B, very surprising, you know? So that's why I'm just like, yeah, I think some crazy stuff's going to happen.
Well, we would agree with that.
I don't agree with that. I'm like, to me, like the crazy idea is Bitcoin becomes money. Not like I'm like farming server space and storing my files with utility tokens so I can earn money from like President Brian Armstrong's Toshi Corporation.
That will not be a democracy.
I just think it's like the most provocative idea is just digital money. Just be like all the money goes digital.
Yeah, I mean, I get psyched about the whole idea of decentralization. The idea that like a new Facebook could come along, but it has a database that is shared.
Yeah.
And like when the third Facebook comes along, no one's going to have to like re-add their friends again. They're just going to use this different interface. And
it's kind of like the divide between like what you're talking about is sort of a consumer tech, labor tech vision. And to me, I'm more interested in the dissolution of nations. To me, like the most provocative idea is like countries lose control over money.
Yeah.
Money is not linked to like national identity.
I mean, that would be, yeah.
And crazy. And in some ways, like the more consumer tech vision almost feels too small to me comparatively. Uh-huh. It has to be like there's no more countries for it to like fulfill the promise almost. Yeah. Jay, we got anything more before we want to get out of here?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, thank you, thanks, Brady. Guys. This was fun. Where can people who want to find your writing on CoinDesk find you?
Just go to CoinDesk. It's usually up in the top in one of the feature wells. And, you know, folks should, I mean, the best thing is to follow me on Twitter at Brady Dale.
Yeah.
And that is, it's the best Twitter.
One last question.
Yes.
Are you bummed to be no coining through this coin era that you're spending so much of your mental energy on?
Kind of, but not really. Because honestly, like when you were saying your whole thing about like, you know, money is the biggest thing. I was like, oh, that's true. It's just that I always have found money kind of boring.
Yeah.
It's just not what gets me jazzed. So yes, would I like to be independently comfortable to pursue the things that I like? Yes.
Art hustling.
Art hustling. But it's just, I've never been super psyched about the money, so.
It's weird. It's like if like sports reporters weren't allowed to watch sports or I guess it'd be like if they weren't allowed to play sports
or bet on sports.
Bet on sports, which
they're not allowed to do. All right. Well, thank you for coming on, Brady.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, May 1st at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $9,004.
Hey, thanks for listening to Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer. My co-host is Jay Kang. Our partner in this is Medium. Our guest this week was Brady Dale from CoinDesk. Thanks to him. Thanks to them. Thanks to our editor, James Nicholson. And thanks to all you people who are listening. If you want to get in touch, it's hi@cointalk.show. We do offer sponsor slots. If you have a company in the blockchain space that you would like to promote on here, we're happy to do so. Send us an email, hi@cointalk.show. Make sure to pick up the Bitcoin Standard. I think it's like $11 on Amazon or something. It's not expensive. And we're going to read the first four chapters for next week. So if you got it, tweet at us at Coin Talk Show. Let us know you're reading. We're going to start with that. Again, Bitcoin Standard by, I apologize for this pronunciation, Saifedean Ammous. We'll see you next week.